Hey, 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 welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and today, dear listener, we're bringing you a very special episode in celebration of Pride Month.
Yeah, and I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and that is right.
Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Noor Saudi, went out and did some reporting, talked to some amazing people who were organizing this year's Pride in New York City.
That's right. From activists to artists to college students, we're going to hear from some of the coolest voices in the LGBTQ community about what they've been doing for Pride Month in New York City.
So everybody knows that this is like a particularly special year for all kinds of reasons. One, I think because just being a part of the community right now, just being alive and out is a kind of act of resistance. Not that anybody wanted to walk around saying I'm an act of resistance, but that is kind of what we're living through. And it's also because this is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising this month.
Right.
And this was basically the catalyst for the modern day LGBTQ rights movement.
Yeah, so we're going to hear about that. And, you know, a lot has happened this month in the LGBTQ community. First of all, it was the third anniversary of Pulse, the Pulse shooting. I think people forgot some of those things and the lives lost and the people speaking out and remembering what happened 3 years ago in Orlando. And also just a few weeks ago, a trans woman, Laylene Polanco, died out in Rikers Island, the jail right here in New York City.
Right. And what we do know is that around the country, whether it's Dallas or the suburbs of Maryland to the U.S.-Mexico border, trans women have been neglected. They're dying. And for those deaths, there hasn't been any justice. And yet they stand, right? So we're going to hear from the voices of people who are going to help us understand what the trans community is facing and how they're responding. So let's take a listen to the great reporting from Noor Saudi.
It's Pride Month, and around the world, people are celebrating the LGBT community. This annual tradition began right here in New York City to commemorate the Stonewall Uprising. So on June 28th in 1969, riots broke out at the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar right here in Greenwich Village, after people from the LGBT community were fed up with targeted police brutality. If you really want to know how that night went down, I suggest a drunk history recap with Crystal West.
Barricaded the whole thing. And Marsha says, you know what? Today is not the motherfucking day. Today is the day that I say no to this bullshit. Like, y'all are not going to continue to run us, to dictate what our lives should be like.
Okay, I'm kidding. But, I mean, that is a pretty accurate version of what happened. But let's hear from some sober folks who were actually there during that time.
Stonewall was, you know, it was always dark in there. You had to feel your way around sometimes.
The interior of the bar was horrific. I mean, they didn't have running water. So no one ordered, if you knew, no one ordered a drink in a glass. But it was ours, I mean. So who cared what it looked like?
And it was always crowded, you know, always crowded. Like, you'd see queer people outside, but walking into the bars and seeing so many of us, you know, it was like, yeah, you know, like, it was home.
That was from the documentary Stonewall Forever by New York City's LGBT Community Center. It can't be said enough that Stonewall marked an important moment for the LGBT movement in New York City and around the world. And trans women like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, they played a huge role in Stonewall's uprising and the movement following it. It was trans women and drag queens of color who were and have been at the front lines. So let's take our time machines back to 1969. Beatles' Get Back is the number one song on the radio for most of June that year. Richard Nixon is president.
Each moment in history is a fleeting time, precious and unique. But some stand out as moments of beginning, in which courses are set that shape decades or centuries. This can be such a moment.
And the average monthly rent in New York City is around $200 to $300. I know, can you imagine? And we're at the crossroads of all these different movements, from women's rights to black liberation. But keep in mind that during this time, homosexual acts were criminalized in every state except Illinois. And in New York, the NYPD would follow this three-piece rule where they policed people's gender identities and targeted anyone who wasn't wearing at least three articles of clothing that matched the gender listed on their IDs. So Stonewall was the boiling point of all of this. To put this in context, I recently went to the office of the Sylvia Rivera Law Project in downtown Manhattan, which was named after Sylvia herself to honor her legacy. It's an organization that provides legal aid and services to low-income people and people of color who are transgender, intersex, or gender nonconforming. And I spoke to two of the organization's directors there about Stonewall and the moment we're in right now in the LGBT movement. Sasha Alexander, director of membership at the organization, told me that Stonewall actually wasn't the first catalyst for LGBT rights.
There was the Compton Cafeteria riots in San Francisco in the Tenderloin, which predates Stonewall. And there was something called Dewey's Lunch Counter Sit-In in Philadelphia, which was a bunch of trans and gender nonconforming black youth primarily. That was in the 50s as part of the civil rights movement. And obviously, like, we've existed, you know, as people, you know. And so I feel like we've always resisted for the city to kind of think they can just erect these statues for Sylvia and Marsha, or the commissioner apologized, which, you know, a lot of us in community felt like that doesn't mean anything because they have these rainbow cop cars and they have these barricades. The pier is still locked down.
Sasha is referring to the NYPD's apology for their role in the Stonewall raids, which came after 50 years. And her colleague, Stephanie Rivera, who's the director of client services at the organization, she says that Stonewall and this moment we're in now represents a time where the LGBT community is no longer accepting the status quo.
I think it takes people to be able to envision and to dream, what does a better future look like and what does pushing back mean? And I think, like, present day today, we're not always fighting for the very same things. I think that pride does not necessarily incorporate trans people. We've always been last, if even thought of. It's never thought of folks of color, primarily black folks. And pride is, especially white, gay, cis, wealthy folks, is that they don't necessarily incorporate, like, the plights of trans people of color. And that's something that needs to be discussed more.
And, you know, the sentiment isn't new. Sylvia Rivera herself, just a few years after the Stonewall Uprising, she was booed by a mostly white, gay, and lesbian crowd for even trying to speak during the New York City Pride rally.
I have been beaten. I have had my nose broken. I have been thrown in jail. I have lost my job. I have lost my apartment for gay liberation. And you all treat me this way? What the fuck's wrong with you all? Think about that.
I think there's a long history of trans people being excluded from spaces, being erased from spaces, the labor of trans women of color and trans people of color being kind of co-opted by larger organizations and agencies. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that trans people do self-determine their gender expression and identity in a way that other people feel there's a threat to that because of how they've been taught to repress who they are, how we've been taught to stay in these boxes or we'll be harmed and hurt. And here you have these people who are, like, being their whole selves. And the gay and lesbian movement actually, like, used us to be very visible in many ways in the beginning of the movement. You know, so essentially, like, our community has been on the front lines continuing to fight for things. And our issues and our safety, you know, has, like, continued to go without support from the larger LGBT community.
Do you feel like this current administration, like under President Trump, has affected the trans movement or the trans rights more or exacerbated? Or do you think it's always been there? How do you feel like the impact has been under this administration?
I mean, in general, I would say the state has never been there for trans people. The state has never been there for people of color or low-income people. I definitely protested a lot under Barack Obama's administration. There were still people being killed and there was still violence happening. However, I mean, you know, like as soon as the Trump administration came into office, it felt like every Friday there was an announcement very strategically, you know, whether about immigrant rights or LGBT people or women, Muslims, like across identities, you know, you just keep having to figure out what to do. I mean, there were just countless attacks on the trans community, specifically from his administration. I mean, but to have announcements about the trans military ban and about the protections for young people rolled back and bathroom laws and, I mean, most recently, like our healthcare rights and the shelter system, like literally every aspect of people's lives and definitely trans people's lives feeling like a threat.
I also like haven't mentioned undocumented folks and just how much that has like impacted the trans community and gender nonconforming community that are immigrants and undocumented, and how there's also been like a race to try to get asylum status of some kind, and the uncertainty of not knowing sometimes what to tell folks, because this is a very unconventional president. And so if you hammer somebody upside the head long enough to actually make them believe that we're all these different things when we're just people trying to utilize a restroom and we're just trying to navigate the world and live our lives free of any type of violence or harm. The Trump administration to me is like one of the worst. He's very inflammatory. He's someone who is just each and every day. It's like I'm in disbelief that he's still there. Like the state-sanctioned violence, as far as like we've had other trans women who have recently passed away at the hands of ICE while they were in custody, and just the anti-immigrant sentiment that this administration represents and how they go about perpetuating the hateful rhetoric, I think is what's changed. I feel like it's emboldened a lot of people to actually speak out what they really feel within their hearts. And so it's scary, but at the same time, it's a very clear reminder for all of us that these are the reasons why we need to continue fighting and why we need to continue pushing forward.
And you know, there's a link between anti-LGBT policies that the Trump administration put forward and this emboldened hatred against trans women that Stephanie mentioned. FBI reports show that violence and hate crimes against the LGBT community, especially trans women of color, have risen after Trump's election. Sasha talked about what it means to be a Black trans woman today.
You know, a lot of times people don't want to say that it is Black trans women specifically. I mean, if we look globally, Black and Latinx trans women specifically, but in the U.S., Black trans women, particularly women who have been in their 20s and 30s, I think one reason that it's happening is anti-Black racism. Just looking at like what is happening to Black people more generally. I mean, looking at what is happening to women more generally, you know, what is happening to trans people. And I just think women are under the microscope, Black folks are under the microscope, trans people are. So when you are at the intersection of those identities, you know, in this country, I just think there's been a history of violence against trans women of color, you know, and Black trans women. And as you're able to hear the voices of more Black trans women and trans women of color, you feel it more because you might not have heard those voices before because they're silenced, they're isolated, right? And you don't know anybody who's impacted by that way. But if you're close to that community, like, oh my God, are folks hurting so intensely? Like folks, yeah, not sleeping and having nightmares and afraid to leave the house. And, you know, just there's already like a high rate of suicidality in the community without all the violence that other people inflict on us, you know. So it's a very, very scary. And I'm scared for my sisters. My wife is also a Black trans woman. My co-director is a Black trans woman. My colleague is a trans woman of color. Like, it's scary when you love trans women.
And a lot of the times within community, we have a very disposable type of mentality. It's like if you're not serving a certain type of purpose and you become a pebble in the shoe. And in my opinion, I feel like there's more than one way to actually extinguish the life of a trans woman, and especially a trans woman of color.
Trans rights are human rights. 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 We aren't safe in the homeless shelters. We aren't safe in the hospital because even with federal protections, doctors and nurses are still refusing to treat us. We aren't even safe in the streets. And Black and trans women of color know far too well we aren't even safe in our own communities. Every day, walking to the store in my own neighborhood in Flatbush, I fear one of the men catcalling me will find out that I'm trans and murder me because of his own shame and violent beliefs about trans people. That his shame is more valuable than my life. We will not back down and rest in peace no more.
No justice, no peace!
You don't like the way we are fighting for ourselves? Then fight for us or get the fuck out the way.
That's India Moore. You may know her from the television series Pose on FX. And these may not be the sounds you normally associate with Pride Month, but in this moment, the trans community was grieving. Laylene Polanco was a trans woman of color who died in solitary confinement in the jail on Rikers Island earlier this month. And by the way, we did reach out to the Department of Corrections for comment, and their spokesperson, Peter Thorne, said in an email that her death, quote, was a tragedy and her family, friends, and all New Yorkers deserve answers. They said they're currently conducting an investigation, but there haven't been any updates as to the cause of her death yet. Laylene was the 10th reported trans woman to die this year. Her death, coming right in the middle of Pride Month, it ignited a powerful response from the LGBT community. India was one of the many voices speaking out at a rally held in New York City to demand justice for Laylene.
Thank you all for being here, but I'm asking you, do something about it. Do something about it. Because today, it was Laylene. Tomorrow, it's going to be you. So take all this love with you tonight and do something about it.
Hundreds of people came out on a rainy, humid day to protest her negligent death. Our intern, Noelis Siriaco, spoke to some folks there about the trans community's demand for answers and justice. Here's what Michael Pellegatti, the nephew of Venus Extravaganza, that's right, the transgender performer from the documentary Paris is Burning, here's what he told Noelis.
What does it mean to you that this happened during Pride Month, especially in New York City, where we're celebrating Stonewall's 50th anniversary?
It's absolutely disgusting. You have Commissioner O'Neill offers an apology for the Stonewall uprising from 50 years ago. Yeah, 50 years too late. Yeah, and now, under his watch, a trans woman dies at Rikers during Pride Month, and what do they have to show for it? No accountability, no nothing. Enough's enough. We've had too many cold cases involving trans women and trans men, too. And it needs to stop, by any means necessary.
You know, it's crazy to think that 50 years after Stonewall, the trans community is still demanding justice. And now there's a whole new generation of LGBT youth continuing that fight. And seeking justice in the form of rallying or protesting and making your voice be heard, that's just one way Pride is being celebrated this month. Pride is often political, but sometimes it can just be as simple as creating an inclusive space for folks to just chill and be themselves. That's what Martin Mazzi, a student at Queens College, told me during CUNY's, which is the City University of New York, their second annual Pride Fest this year. Martin, who's going into his senior year, is going to be the next president of GLASA, that's the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Alliance Club at Queens College. And he said to him, Pride is just about feeling safe.
I actually do feel like it's a more personal thing because I actually don't know if I'm gay or not, if anything. Like, I keep saying that, like, I'm gay, I'm bi, I'm straight, I'm this, that. But in reality, I just don't know what my identity really is. I'm still trying to explore that. So it definitely does, it feels really relieving that I see, like, a lot of people taking pride in who they are, whether they know who they are or not, and I feel like I'm in the crowd. It's definitely a breath of fresh air knowing that I'm not forced to put a label on myself. Like, I can be this, I can be that. It's a breath of fresh air. At least here on campus, I actually do feel a lot safer, as along with like a lot of like other people, especially around the Glossa Club room where you can be all open outside of Pride Month, and heck, during Pride Month as well. It's usually just like a safe space where we just hang out and chill there. We're really informal. We talk about whatever the hell we want. It's really just like a hangout space for pretty much anybody.
And actually, inclusion is the goal of New York City Pride, according to Julian Sanjivan, the director of the march. They explained what it takes to pull off what's predicted to be the biggest Pride march in Pride history. And that's because this year, New York is actually hosting World Pride, along with commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising. World Pride is basically like the World Cup. It's a global event. People come from all over to celebrate, and you have to bid to host it. There are opening and closing ceremonies, and a record 4.5 million people are estimated to be at the World Pride celebration in New York City this year. I caught up with Julian after a panel about the making of the New York City Pride March.
It's the first time that we are hosting World Pride here in the United States, and New York City has the prestige of actually doing that, so it's definitely amazing. There are lots of different elements that we are looking at for the march and all the other different events that we host to try and make sure that we are tying in with World Pride and also the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising. We're looking at having extra grand marshals. One of the grand marshals, which is the Gay Liberation Front, they are specifically part of the Stonewall era trailblazers. A lot of them were from that era when the Stonewall Uprising was happening. Some of them were also directly involved. So, you know, it's a huge significance. We are also trying to recognize Marsha and Sylvia Rivera by having a convertible right at the lead section of the march with their pictures and floral arrangements. And, you know, it's going to be amazing. So a lot of different elements like that that we are, you know, splashing throughout the march to make it symbolic and also make it more memorable this year.
What do you say to people who feel like New York City Pride is not inclusive enough?
There are going to be folks who may feel, specifically the Pride March, let's focus on that, because we do a lot of different events, and our events do try and cater to as many diverse groups as possible. For instance, our Youth Pride attracts a lot of youth, especially youth of color, and then we have our Pride Fest, which also attracts a large portion of the community, especially community of color. We attract about hundreds of thousands of folks there, and these are all free events. The march is definitely one of the largest, most historical event. And for an event that's like 9 hours long last year, we had 70,000 marchers and a huge part of the spectators too. Like we had about close to 2.5 to 3 million people. If you're there for the whole period of time, you get to see how intersectional and how diverse the event really is. As a person of color myself, to me, it's so important to make sure that we are representing a white community, especially people of color, immigrants, trans community. This year, for instance, we are focusing on having a large group of trans people of color right in the lead section of the march, right behind our grand marshals and all of that. We also have a contingent just for people of color. That entire section is usually right in the beginning of the march. So these are little initiatives that we do throughout to make sure that we are more intersectional. And this is intentional.
What is the one thing you're most looking forward to for this year's New York City Pride March?
I think one great thing, it's definitely the number of people that we are looking at, like just in terms of the diversity internationally. It's World Pride, and we are looking at a lot of other Pride organizers from all over the country and also outside of the country who are going to be here, who are going to be present to celebrate this. And I think it's really important that this is going to be happening. So I'm really looking forward to it. And this year is the 20th anniversary of the trans flag. And we have the creator of the trans flag as one of the grand marshals too. So it's little things like this. And I'm really looking forward to the representation, celebrating the trans community. All of this is really going to be important. And the 50th anniversary and being part of that with the team and the director of this 50th anniversary, it means a lot. And just because some of us want to protest, we cannot and we should not impose that as the only way to celebrate Pride, especially when you're talking and working with marginalized communities and queer folks of color. We all choose to represent and express how we want to celebrate Pride differently. The Caribbean folks, for them, Pride is a carnival. And that's how they choose to celebrate Pride. So it's important to kind of understand and really respect that.
The march in New York City will be on Sunday, June 30th. Whether you're going to march or organizing some other way for the LGBT community, this month is about being your most authentic and free self, however you identify, and whatever way you choose to celebrate. You know, what I learned listening to people from all corners of this movement is that Pride really means different things to different people. Pride is personal. But what stuck with me is something both Sasha and Stephanie said, that to honor 50 years since Stonewall and carry on the legacy of trans people of color is to continue standing up to power. I want to give a huge thank you to all the amazing people who talked to me about what Pride means for them. I'm Noor Saudi.
Uno, dos, tres.
Remember, everyone, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really, really, really helps. Also, now you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In The Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell all your friends. In The Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell and me, the New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. And shout out to our intern, Noli Siriaco, for helping me report out this story. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional, Kep, and ZZK Records. We will see you next time. Thank you so much for listening. Bye!
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.